Welcome to Disruptive Successor, a show for next generation leaders in family businesses and entrepreneurs who want to disrupt the status quo and take their existing business to a whole new level. We all know that what got us here isn't going to get us there. This show will provide inspiration, advice, and resources to help you create massive impact.
This podcast is sponsored by myself, Jonathan Goldhill, and my company, The Goldhill Group, where we provide coaching for growing companies. I'm Jonathan Goldhill, and my purpose is simple: to guide entrepreneurial leaders in family businesses towards more freedom and fulfillment. I want entrepreneurs to get clarity around the changes that will make them and their businesses more successful so they can experience the same freedom I've enjoyed in my life. Our proven practices challenge business owners to think differently about their business and how they're running it, and quite literally become game changers in our clients' companies. Learn more at thegoldhillgroup.com website, where you can schedule your free strategy session. Hi, Jonathan Goldhill here. Welcome back to another episode of the Disruptive Successor Show. Today's guest is Dr. Jeremy Lurie, who is a talented executive coach and business psychologist who helps his clients identify their strategic objectives and develop the action plans required to achieve their future goals. With 25 years of progressive experience as a management consultant, he is a trusted advisor for and has supported clients ranging from multi-generational family businesses to mid-market companies to Fortune 500 corporations. Dr. Lurie excels at designing custom leadership development strategies and business succession plans, coaching both baby boomers who are transitioning into retirement and their next-gen successors who are assuming those higher level leadership positions. His clients regularly acknowledge his ability to get them unstuck and guide them to the next level while doing so in a way that is compassionate, supportive, authentic, and helps them achieve their strategic objectives. Jeremy, welcome to my show today.
Thank you. Really appreciate the invitation to be here and looking forward to it.
You know, it's great to have another family business coach, advisor. You're an organizational psychologist. We're close to each other. You're in Malibu, California. And it's great to know we have a community of support and that we have listeners who are really interested in some of the challenges they face in family businesses. And so something I want to start off with you today is an area that I know you have more expertise than I and have done more of this, and that is succession planning. You know, I want to talk a little bit about, I want to ask you, what does that process look like? What are some people's assumptions about what it looks like? And, you know, if we can also jump into like where and when, like, you know, what are the indicators that suggest now? Because I find people always come when it's too late, like they're ready to exit. So let's talk a little bit about how you approach succession planning with clients.
Sure. Thanks. And, you know, yes, I have a background in family business. That's definitely my passion. One client calls it my calling. So we can talk about family business today, but let's just start with business in general. Doesn't matter if, you know, parent child is the handoff we're talking about or, you know, professional leaders. And coming off of this last year of COVID conditions, we're seeing much more of this now, probably than ever before, where baby boomers who thought they'd work another 3, 5, maybe 10 years are saying, I think I've had enough. And so my first response to you, Jonathan, is yes, you can sort of do this overnight. It's not ideal. You know, I talk about an 18-month window typically as sort of my insurance policy. I want to get through enough time to mentor my next-gen successor. I want to sit by his or her side and shadow and consult and advise before I truly disappear. And so I'll walk through 5 distinct phases that we typically use. But again, right, I'll highlight, if there is that, you know, heart attack, stroke, you know, God forbid that something really drastic happens, of course, we can shorten any of the cycle. But in an ideal state, if we're planning early, we start with an initial phase of just committing to it. If I am, you know, senior and I want to retire by January of 2022, or January of 2023, just starting there and sort of defining our time frame. And then obviously identifying who that successor might be, whether it's my son or my VP of operations, depending on our business structure. And as we move from initial planning into our next phase of leadership coaching, we're now engaging with that next gen, starting to figure out what are the business requirements for, I'll just talk about CEO as our position for the moment. We could talk about a CFO or head of ops or anything else. But if we're talking to the CEO, what does our company need of the next CEO? Because what got us here may not get us there for the next 25 years or 50 years. And so looking at business requirements and job fit is really important. And then talking to that next gen, because we talk about generational differences, you know, folks like my father, the baby boomer, it was very much up and out. Take every promotion you could, make more money, provide for family. But as a Gen Xer, I'll tell you, work-life balance means something different to me. And I may not be interested in being CEO. I maybe want to be the soccer coach or things like that. And so that's that engagement, starting the development of helping that person learn what it is to run a company or perform in that function if it's not the CEO.
We get Let's just digress for a second, though, before. So you've gotten to the second of five stages or phases of this assignment. But you know, how often do you find, because I find it too often, that people come to me and say, well, I want to do this succession planning. I've been, you know, thinking about this, but then they put it off again and they keep putting it off and they're waiting till something maybe cataclysmic happens. Of course, that's not what they're waiting for, but they keep thinking that they'll be able to do it. They'll go longer, like, and delay this. I mean, don't you find that that happens just too often?
It does. I can't even count the number of clients I've spoken to where the first conversation is, Jeremy, I was really planning to retire when I turned 65. And I thought, great, Jonathan, how old are you? 69, 72, 74.
Right.
Like, all right. So yes, you know, it is very common. And again, I think we're seeing a shift post-COVID that people are saying, I'm tired. I've had enough. I've made enough money. I've provided for my family. I've earned the right to sort of, you know, step into my third act, my golden years. So I think people are letting go differently now. You know, part of how I got into succession planning is I watched my dad. It took him 4 years to retire. He was the senior most attorney at one of the world's largest law firms. He was literally the only one who ever worked with the two founding partners. It was his entire life, right? And so we talk about baby boomers primarily who are exiting now. They're not sure what to do with themselves next. They have built a life on success significantly in that business and in that position. So having them let go, for folks like my dad, it's sort of the death of them. It's not the ending of a professional career and the beginning of something new. It's truly experience of a very emotional, you know, sacrifice of letting go.
Yeah.
So that does derail us. It does definitely delay us regularly.
And I'm seeing more people that are what I call half retire. So they stay in, you know, they only work 20 hours a week, but they're taking maybe as much or maybe even more out of the company, which becomes a real drain. I have this with one of my clients where I made this woman CEO step up to her dad and say, you have to stop taking distributions out as a draw every week. Mm-hmm. You're draining and bleeding the company. And I took a pay cut so you could do that. That's like game over. So, all right, let's get into the third stage.
So stage one, initial planning.
Right.
Stage two, we're talking about leadership coaching. And as we've identified the next gen, helping that person start to see what it is to run a company or run a business function. Mm-hmm. Phase three then is really the transition planning. So we're looking at management responsibilities. And again, if it's the CEO, could be responsible for business development and sales and customer relationships, could be responsible for finance and the person who actually signs the checks for the banks. Mm-hmm. If we're talking head of operations, again, a whole other set of functions. But we need to start planning the transfer of those responsibilities from the current leading gen in that role to the next gen successor. And I like several months, if not, you know, a few quarters to plan that out. If I'm junior and I've never looked at a P&L before, it's going to take me some time just to learn finance, let alone learn our operations, learn all of our customer relationships, learn our banking. So transition planning can be a good period of time And then we get into.
So let's talk about that for a second. I want to pause because I've just realized what may be a disconnect for our clients, the baby boomer, who is looking at that and kind of thinking like, wait, this shouldn't really take very long. Like, that's just a flip of a switch, because in their mind, they've been doing it for so long. They think that the child either is going to get it right away, and so it's just a flip of a switch, or the flip of the switch goes the other way. Hey, my child's never going to learn this stuff. They don't understand. I've been doing it. Right. I don't trust them to be able to do it. And so I don't think they have an appreciation for how long it takes. You said several months to several quarters to make that transition, because that switch is literally a sticky switch, if you will.
Right.
You know? So
I was sitting with an 80-year-old patriarch / CEO yesterday here in Los Angeles. And in his mind, no one can do what he does.
Of course.
And he may be right. He has a huge job. He has a very complex business that he's developed over the years. And by years, I mean decades, right? Mm-hmm. And so he may not be able to replace himself with one person. It may take two or three people to do that job. And so you're correct that on one end of the spectrum, folks won't let go because they don't think anyone can do it. On the other hand, they let go and say, Jonathan, why haven't you figured this out yet? Why are you getting it wrong?
Right.
And there's no patience for seeing that through.
Right.
But again, that transition planning could take several months, if not several quarters, to be complete. That does get us to the fourth stage of post-transition.
Right. But because entrepreneurs hate process, Jeremy. That's why. So they think of themselves as entrepreneurs, and they hate process. It's like, get it done. And so,
and for the most part, our entrepreneurial clients, they just figured it out on their own.
Right.
Why are you telling me I have to turn from being a manager to being a mentor? Why do I have to teach you how to do this stuff? I figured it out. You should figure it out too.
Exactly.
But again, that's where I talk about my 18-month window in the insurance policy. You could say, I'm now retired. Jonathan, you're my CEO. Good luck. And we're done. But the fourth phase is really important of post-transition, because the first time you go through an annual audit with our accountant, I want to be by your side. The first time there's a customer claim or some kind of a process mishap, I want to be by your side. And so really try to think about becoming that president emeritus, or, you know, oftentimes we talk about in retirement, the semi-retired consultant advisor type role. So those things are really helpful if we're talking about having a smooth and successful process. And then just quickly, not all of our clients own their businesses. Not all of them are going to transfer ownership between generations. But if we're talking about a family business, it regularly does happen. So the fifth phase is all about that purchase and sale, which for some businesses, that happens on the same day as naming you the managing partner of our law firm. But if we're talking about an asset-rich manufacturing and distribution company with $100 million of equipment and facilities, whatever, that could take years before that purchase is complete. So we hold it out as sort of a fifth phase that, you know, we often get bankers, attorneys, accountants, other advisors involved in helping structure those deals. It's not about the leadership anymore. Now we're talking about the ownership.
So let's talk about that fifth phase a little bit, because I suspect that in smaller businesses, that fifth phase moves up in terms of timing to earlier on in the process. Because that next gen leader who's going to be stepping in, he or she or they want to know, like, what's in it for me? What am I going to get out of this? Am I buying into this? Am I taking a loan? Is this coming from my, you know, yours and mom's lifetime, you know, gifting exemption with the, you know, whatever it's called, tax gift exemption? I mean, what does this look like? And that's a difficult conversation to introduce too early on, but it can't wait till too late.
Right. So I was brought into a family business recently. We're just starting because of that. They don't know exactly what the trust documents say. They don't know exactly what the business assets are. And, you know, we're talking about a billion-dollar family here. This is a pretty significant one. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the children who are in the business don't exactly know. Are they going to become owners? How is this going to happen? In their case, they likely will. It just hasn't been described yet. So to your point, you don't want to engage too early, but we do want to have these conversations. I have another family, though, I've been working with for 8 or 10 years now. The trust is set up in a way that it's very difficult for the third generation to pass their ownership on to the fourth generation before death. It's really a transfer upon death situation. So I, the fourth generation president running the company now, he has no equity. We can create a phantom stock program. We can use non-equity compensation strategies. Sure. But in that one, it was very simple. It came up once. Nope, you're not getting any ownership. Okay.
Okay.
So we have to look at different compensation strategies. So there is no one size fits all. It's really going to depend on each situation. Is it a professional corporation? Is it a privately held company? Is it a family owned and operated business? How do we want to transfer ownership? Because you could retire and still be the majority owner of our company.
Sure.
That happens.
Of course.
Or you could retire and say, I'm gone. I don't want to have anything to do with this anymore. Buy me out and give me my $10 million or $100 million, whatever it might be, which now we get into some really complicated financial structures.
Well, I think there's a lot of challenges to having a smooth and effective process. And I imagine it is somewhat messy and never linear, as much as you might like it. I mean, people listening might think, well, Jeremy, it sounds like phase one, how long does that last? Phase two, how long does that last? I mean, they're overlapping in their stages or phases, are they not? And it's not always that clean or simple.
They are. And absolutely, things get much messier before they get clean on the other side. You know, one of the key challenges, you talked about the leading gens who are sort of holding on, and whether it's sort of more of their ego and their identity around being in control and being successful, or it's just the emotional sort of call it, you know, instability of what comes next and the uncertainty of where they're going. I had one CEO I was working with, and my very first time I sat down with him, so I was brought in by the board. He said, Jeremy, I bet you're a great executive coach. I've seen your bio. Sounds like you do a lot of great work. I don't think I need an executive coach. And I quietly gulped a little bit because I thought I was getting fired. But his next statement was really powerful, which was, I've never been a mentor. And I know who my successor is. I think the world of him. I brought him in 8 years ago to be my successor. But is there something you can do to help me? Because I don't want to be a lame duck CEO. I don't want to sit around and be the old guy in the corner. I want to really help support my successor. And I just don't know what that looks like. And so part of the challenge is just helping that leader in transition come to terms with what's happening. And then sharing a process like I was laying out before that's a little bit more straightforward. Sometimes our challenge is just we don't have a next gen in place, right? We have a kid in the corner because it's a family business. And so you would think that junior is going to step up, but maybe junior is not a good fit. Or you may have multiple candidates. I had one client where the CEO came to me and said, I want to be gone in 90 days. Now, to his credit, they've been working on it for 6 months in sort of subtle ways. So it was really more about a 9 month transition to his 70th, you know, birthday and retirement party and things like that. But they had three candidates, a, you know, EVP, a sort of program development and sales, a CFO and a COO type people. And so who's the right one? And we had to start with figuring that out, the assessment on those three candidates before we could proceed. So lots of challenges. It's a very emotional journey.
That almost sounds easier than dealing with the situation where you have only one child and that child is not really qualified.
Well, we regularly get brought in to help train up that next generation. And at some point, people always ask, well, what if they're not a good fit? I'll call it out. I have folks who I don't think are the epitome of CEO or CFO or COO, whatever role we're talking about, but they can be good enough or you can train them in the technical skills. They have the right heart, the right passion, what have you. And so not everybody is going to fill the shoes of who they are succeeding. And that's not what I want.
Right.
I was talking about the lame duck CEO. Everyone said, well, no one could do what Bill did. I don't want someone to do what Bill did. Bill got the organization through the last 30 years. But where are we going in the next 30 years, which you talk about disruptive, you know, changes in organizations, that is what we need to talk about today of how do we drive innovation through this process, not how do we repeat the past?
Right. So let's before we get to that, because that's the next topic I want to talk about, is how do we get the baby boomers to shift their mindset and empower their children and other next gens to take over? Like, what can we do better as coaches? What can they do better as owners that know that it's time for them to pass the baton? What are your thoughts?
It's a really good question. I'm going to talk about the non-family business first and then the family business. Because in the family business, we still have the same scenario. I'm working with a very senior level executive. He's been with his global tech company for more than 10 years, but people still know him as sort of that junior engineer who came up through the ranks to be manager, vice president, what have you. He could run the company, but people still see him as the junior engineer. So when you talk about mindset shift, we need to be present to where people at today. Folks do role appropriate work. If this person I'm talking to acted like the CEO 3 years ago, he would have been fired. Mm-hmm. Until he gets named the successor to the CEO, he has to act in the role that he's been hired to do.
Sure.
That gets exacerbated in a family business because I've got the family business, the two next gens, the co-president brothers, they're roughly 50 years old. Their father has known them for 50 years, has seen them wrap the car around the tree, has seen them, drop out of college, has seen them do whatever they've done in their lifetimes to where they still show up as kids. And by the way, these folks still call dad in the office. So they reinforce that familial relationship and that connection to the past and the history. So until we can help elevate our next gens, and by the way, for all the next gens listening, until you really step up as business partners and thought leaders and drive strategy for the company, it's really easy for you to think of you as the kids or the not quite good enough to run the company. So part of our work is to develop that leadership capability, give them a voice in that C-suite, help them talk about their vision for the future so that the moms and the dads or the professional leaders really do see them as the executives that they are becoming, not as the children or younger generations that they maybe have been.
Yeah, I so agree with that. And my approach has been to focus on that next gen because, look, you guys as next gen leaders are more coachable. You're younger, your minds are more open, you're hungrier probably, hopefully you're more humble. Arrogance is going to get in your way if that's something that if you're not humble, your arrogance is going to come and bite you really badly. Seen it happen too many times. So what you need to do is level up your skills. And that's why I like really working, Jeremy, with the next gen leaders, because they're willing to read, they're willing to learn, they're willing to take on the challenges. I love the conversations I have with the older generation because I feel like I could have, it's like literally sitting around having a cigar and a scotch and really comparing notes. But the job, I think, is... You guys, you younger gen folks, you can only change yourselves. When you get the maturity to realize you can't really change others, others change themselves when they want to, if they want to, that the only thing you can do is level up your skills so they stop seeing you as son or as junior and they start seeing you as an equal. And you'll know maybe one of the telltale signs is, they'll start calling you by your first name and you'll call them by their first name in and around the office so that it's not dad and son. That's right. Not the role that you're in when you're at work. So
I completely agree.
Yeah. So that's one thing that you guys need to do as the next gen is you need to prove yourself to them. And you need to be not prove yourself according to what their benchmark is for approval and acceptance, because you'll never maybe reach their benchmark because they'll keep raising the bar. You need to be an adult and know what is the right benchmark. And that's why working with a coach who's got some outside objectivity on what a CEO looks like and does and how they act, you can get validation from an outside person. So important. So, okay. Any other issues you see in the, passing the baton from one gen to the next before we move on to the disruption?
One of the other things, you and I are not financial advisors, we're coaches and advisors in different ways, but I will just offer, given today's market, I have clients who are getting 10, 15, 20 times, valuations to where it might not be in the family's best interest to try to continue to the next generation. I'm all for legacy family businesses. Mm-hmm. But if we can take some money off the table and diversify our investments and minimize our risk for the future, especially if we have much younger children who haven't really demonstrated a desire to come into the family business, even if you bring in an outside, you know, sort of operator for 3 to 5 years to be that, you know, stopgap, it is a good time to be selling these days. So I want to highlight that it is okay to not pass the baton. And sometimes we have shareholders. I've got one family in the Midwest. You've got 6 shareholders in the next generation, 2 in the senior generation. And there's a lot of discussion about, should we sell now? You know, obviously the CEO who's the next gen wants to keep going. He likes his job and he likes growing the company. But there are some good times to look to exit, not look to transition.
Yeah, because you can have your capital at much lesser risk and getting a pretty good return on your invested capital. So like I would say, if you're not getting at least a minimum of 25% return on invested capital, one of my colleagues in the accounting field feels as though that number is more like 75% or 50 to 75%. So you could have your money invested in you know, the equities markets and be doing a lot better with a lot more liquidity. So if you don't take all the chips off the table, then you might consider recapitalizing your company and reducing your concentration of wealth, which might lie strictly in your home or homes and your business. So it makes a lot of sense. And now is a great time because, we're probably seeing all-time record high numbers. And boy, they predicted for the last 15 years a tsunami of businesses for sale because of baby boomers, the tail end of the baby boomers are coming in now. And what they're doing is they're ending up holding onto their businesses longer, right? It seems like.
Now, you and I both know from the exit planning world, it's not as easy as just putting it on the market and selling it, right? I mean, you do still have to have embedded leadership. So the succession planning and developing our next gens, coaching them up to run companies or what could be divisions of a larger, you know, corporation in the future, it's still incredibly important work, but you may be able to exit and, you know, take the money off the table while also supporting your next generation and stepping up through the transaction.
Yep. Should we get into talking about disruptors, success, absolutely, disruptive succession? What are your thoughts on, disruption? Because first, we've been talking about a disruptive process, which is moving it from one generation to the next. And then there's a transfer of wealth or equity from one gen to the next. But there's a disruption in how they do the business. It might be processes, as I talk about in my book. It might be new product innovations. It could be going into new markets geographically. And you know, the challenge always is that the older generation, which is seeking more security and has already built their wealth up, they're not looking to take big bets. The 30-year-old, if you're the next gen leader, you're willing to take bigger bets. You may have a more of a business mindset than your baby boomer parent and or more entrepreneurial bent. And so you're willing to quote unquote bet the farm. And, a farmer never likes to bet the farm. So what are your thoughts on disruptions? What are you seeing? What would you like to share on that?
So topic? As I alluded to earlier, people often look at business succession planning very narrowly, as in Jeremy's getting old. Jonathan, can you fill Jeremy's shoes? Can you create some continuity moving forward? And there's nothing wrong with that as a starting point. Of course, you know, we want you to meet minimal expectations and performing that role, again, CEO or anything else. But I've got a client on the East Coast, dad who was second generation leader, never took the company bigger than 10 or maybe 15 million, and never thought that it was possible to grow it beyond 10 or 15 million. Well, with his next generation sons involved, they're now already at 30 million, talking about 50. And dad never thought that was going to be possible. He just never would have known what sort of the business development strategies would be, how to go to market in different ways. And to your point earlier about you can expand regionally into new markets, you can expand through product and service lines, you can tap different, you know, customer populations. that rarely happens with the leading gen who is later in life and sort of set in his or her ways because they've been successful doing one thing. It takes that next gen coming in with a new vision for the future, looking at what's possible and getting that fresh start. And so our job is to nurture that new culture, thinking about growth, expansion, development, innovation. And it's just really exciting to see. You know, we go through these succession planning processes, and sometimes we're just lucky to get a good fit and get that next gen who can create some sustainability. But then you see the innovations and those breakthroughs and thinking happening. Sometimes it's about shared leadership, right? I work with a lot of patriarchs where it's my way or the highway, a very autocratic, sort of dominant approach, but you get the next gen in, and before you know it, the whole management team is contributing. So it's not just about product innovation, it's about the leadership and being more participative through that shared process. So we could talk for another whole podcast about this, I'm sure, but yeah. I'm always really excited to see those innovations and to see those breakthroughs happen because of, as you said, this disruptive process.
Yeah, and I think that you point to the thing that's always most important, I think, in building a business and a better business, it's about the people. So mm-hmm. if you get the right minds at the table, then that those right minds will develop and have conversations around disruption. Because as I was sitting listening to you, I was thinking, well, what are some good disruptive processes? What are like tools or workshop type processes to get people into a disruptive frame of thinking? And you know, I'm not sure I'd have some ready answers for that, but I think get enough people in the room who challenge the status quo, who are willing to engage in constructive conversations, conflict, mm-hmm. you know, who challenge each other and who share those as common values, they will drive disruption and improvements in your business model, your business processes, and your products. So
right. We have several tools that we use to facilitate that. For those watching, not just listening with us, you see a lighthouse behind me mm-hmm. on the wall. I'm a firm believer if we know where we're going, we're far more likely to get there. So just charting the path and knowing where that lighthouse is, what are our goals 3, 5, 10 years down the road? We've got different tools to do sort of a pattern interrupt and look at mm-hmm. stop, start, continue. For you know, our mm-hmm. firm, we embrace the plus delta. Mm-hmm. What are we doing positively that's a strength we want to continue? What are those deltas for change and opportunities for improvement? And to your point, get the right people around the table. This is not about an autocratic sort of leadership style of one person knows best. The more minds we get around that table, you know, within reason, it's not necessarily the whole company, but you know, senior leadership, the more we can create some innovations and some breakthroughs. And how do we treat our people and create a supportive culture? How do we better serve our customers? How do we increase and generate new revenues? You mean, all those are great questions. Yep. That tend to come out of these processes.
Yep. So I'm just going to reference our listeners back to a prior podcast that I did with the Grossman brothers, who are running a fourth generation business out of Boston area. Their great grandfather, or great great grandfather, if that's the right, started as an envelope company. I mean, imagine having an envelope mailing company today. They turned it into a promotional products company. But what was it really valuable for these two brothers as they joined the business was when they were in business school, one of them at NYU, they did that start, stop, continue exercise where they mm-hmm. went around and talked to all the team leaders and said and asked, you know, what should the company start doing? What should it stop doing? What should it continue doing? And they learned so much from that exercise. I mean, what a great exercise for business school, you know, interns or people working on a project. But for leaders of companies, if you're not having start, stop, keep or start, stop, continue conversations with your people on a somewhat periodic or regular basis, you're really missing out on the disruptive ideas that might be lying right underneath the surface right. in your, you know, right. within your employees.
And that's such an easy tool to apply with such powerful results. You don't need the MBA to know how to use it. It's literally three right. questions.
Yep.
What do we want to continue doing? We're already getting positive results. what do we want to start doing now that we have that foundation and success? What do we want to stop doing? And no harm, no foul, but it's producing some unintended consequences. And so what do we want to stop to make room for these other activities and behaviors? And so it's just a very simple way of creating some structure to that conversation. And we can construct a brand new future based on the outcomes of that.
Yep. And by the way, you could do it company-wide. You could do it just in your department. And you could also do it just around your leadership. If you're a leader or a manager, you know, what should I stop doing? What should I start doing? What should I keep doing? It's a great team building, team effectiveness exercise when used in that capacity. All right. Yeah. So as we start to wrap up here, we've been in interesting times. We're now about a year and a half into the pandemic. It's been a rock and roll course it's been a roller coaster, I should say, for a lot of businesses in different industries. I know that you have really keen insights in this area. What are some final recommendations that you have for our listeners to produce even better business results during these continuing COVID conditions?
Yeah, thank you. And it's an important place for us to end the conversation because we're at a point of inflection again where we think, there's more exposure for folks. As we go back to sort of normalcy, we might need to retrench and sort of be that safer at home mindset for a while. And so I would just start with, very first, be kind to yourself. Lots of people are struggling just to get out of bed right now, right? I mean, I have CEOs who are very successful in their own right. They're struggling to get out of bed, and we want them to be the inspiring leaders for their workforce. And it's tough. And so find those ways to sort of live a healthier life. And for some of us, it is the scotch or glass of wine at the end of a hard day to just settle in. For others of us, it's getting up from our desk in the middle of the day and just going to walk around for a few minutes. Nature and being in the outdoors and sun on your face while we still have some summer weather is really, really powerful to just reset your mind on where you're at. And then from there, now we can talk about being resilient. Right. Once we're present, we own our emotions, we recognize things are going on we don't have control over. Now we can be resilient and sort of use that gritty leadership style to focus on what is the one goal that we want to go accomplish? What would make the biggest difference in our business this month or this quarter? And really going from macro goals to micro goals, 30, 60, 90 day sort of sprints. And it's easy for all of us to run a short 5K. Maybe you walk a little bit, but I'm confident we could all do a short 5K. Running marathons and ultra marathons, that's pretty hard stuff for even the best athletes to do. And so I really try to break things down into what's manageable, put one foot in front of the other day by day, and just keep going on. But again, be kind to yourself, be kind to others around you, especially your teammates and your workforce. Because everyone's going through the same heartache. And whether you are on premise and working back at work or you are remote at home, people are still struggling. So just sort of recognize that and give people the space to experience what they are, but then also sort of bring the focus to your business so that people can get that one thing done and in that next 30-day window before you move on to something else.
Yeah, I think that's really sage advice. So one thing that I always tell my clients is to focus on their number one thing. Mm-hmm. Not to the exclusion of everything else, but to put it, make it preeminent in their minds. It's the most important thing. And, what I've been seeing and reading and maybe even experiencing during COVID is it's been a great time for reflection. For some people, they've started projects or hobbies or things that they always wanted to do. And for others, they maybe are still thinking about something that they could have or should have done. And be kind to yourself. I like those words. Don't beat yourself up because you haven't gotten to it. And recognize that, as B.C. Forbes said something to the effect of the business of business is like the business of living. Put life first, because if you put all your business goals first, you'll crowd out all your life goals. And it's easy for us to be focused on our business goals and then to the exclusion of our life goals or our marriages or, our children. Don't make that mistake. So, you know, enjoy the journey. If building a business is part of what you enjoy, then, you know, balance that with the other activities. So, hey, this has been a great time spent with you. Anything you want to say in closing before I give people some ways to contact you?
Yeah, you know, just one final thing as we get back to succession planning where we started. I'm a firm believer in the transition timeout, as I call it. You get into these dual leadership situations with the leading gen, the next gen, who's in charge. Even if we talk about COVID conditions, like I think everyone deserves a chance to call a timeout. No judgment or blame, just, hey, I'm confused. Who do I go to for decision-making on this? Or, hey, I thought you said that this was going to happen by then. Or, you know, these goals don't seem appropriate given market conditions. And so I would just offer in closing, let people take the timeout. Give everyone people permission to hold up that stop sign, either, you know, physically or proverbially. But, you know, have the conversations you need to reset and get focused. Don't just assume everyone knows what's going on or everyone is aligned. It's really important to take that time out to get aligned.
Super helpful. Thank you. All right. So Jeremy Lurie, you are reachable at jslurie@chiefexeccoach.com. We'll have that information in the show notes because I'm sure people will butcher the spelling and won't be able to find you. So we'll make sure to have that. And I'm sure you'd like people to connect with you, on LinkedIn, via email? What's the best
Absolutely. Way? Feel free to send me an email. You can find me on LinkedIn at Jeremy Lurie, JeremyLurey. And happy to talk to anyone about your specific situations if there's more I can share based on what we've already discussed today.
Sounds good. So obviously, Jeremy is deep in the trenches, working with a lot of companies at many levels across the entire nation. Someone I look up to and respect. I hope you enjoyed the show and you'll be able to take something from this show and apply it in your business. And if not, you reach out to one of us for our expertise and advice. So if you enjoyed this show, listen, share, and tell others about the show. And don't forget to subscribe. Thanks a lot. This podcast is sponsored by myself, Jonathan Goldhill, and my company, The Goldhill Group, where we provide coaching for growing companies. I'm Jonathan Goldhill, and my purpose is simple: to guide entrepreneurial leaders in family businesses towards more freedom and fulfillment. I want entrepreneurs to get clarity around the changes that will make them and their businesses more successful so they can experience the same freedom I've enjoyed in my life. Our proven practices challenge business owners to think differently about their business and how they're running it, and quite literally become game changers in our clients' companies. Learn more at the goldhillgroup.com website, where you can schedule your free strategy session. Thank you for joining us on the Disruptive Successor Podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe, review, and share with a friend who would benefit from the message. If you're interested in picking up a copy of my book, Disruptive Successor, go to disruptivesuccessor.com.